You can press the button if you want it to be higher.
I'm sure it'll go any higher.
There you go. Press it again if you want it to stop.
That's good, Your Honors. Good morning, Your Honors.
We also have a little mushroom there. It's marked eat me. If you eat one side of the mushroom, you get smaller.
Okay. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Nicholas Otis, and I represent the defendant appellant, Jerome Williams, Jr. Mr. Williams raises three issues on appeal. I'm not sure we'll be able to address all of them today. The first issue that Mr. Williams raises is he argues that the district court erred when it found that the government's 851 notice provided Mr. Williams with reasonable notice of the government's intent to enhance his sentence to a minimum.
I'm a little unclear about your argument there. So suppose the government had simply taken the prior record out of the pre-investigation report and stapled it to the 851 notice that they gave you. Would that comply?
Respectfully, Your Honor, we disagree that it would not comply for a few reasons.
Amen. That's a double negative. What is your position?
That it would not comply with...
It would not comply if the prosecutor puts in all 14 offenses in the original notice.
Yes, Your Honor. First, because...
Well, what if the prosecutor stapled it and then put yellow highlighter on the prior offenses that the prosecutor thought satisfied the criteria of 851? Not all of them did in this case, but suppose the prosecutor pulls out the old highlighter.
First, Your Honor, and I need to make a correction to our briefs. The pretrial services report in the prior record section, it doesn't state the conviction. It states the charge.
Well, it has disposition.
It does say the disposition, but that doesn't necessarily mean that correlates with the charge. Many times in state court, when we practice there, the initial charge is reduced down to a misdemeanor or something else.
Well, yes, but if the disposition is, 6 years or 2 years.
Well, it was 18 months in the 1994 charge.
Well, 18 months is felony.
Again, Your Honor, I wasn't the trial court attorney. I don't know, but from here it's not exactly clear that it was a felony.
Well, no.
Let's pin down your answer to Judge Wood's question. They list 14 charges and dispositions, and they put highlighting on two of them. Is that enough?
Possibly, if it's clear from the face of the document that it's a felony drug conviction.
Okay. Well, it sounds, therefore, like you are making the argument that the information must provide two things. It must provide a list of convictions, and it must state which of these convictions the prosecutor intends to rely on.
Right.
My question, maybe similar to the questions the other two judges have asked, what in the statute says that? Right? The statute says list the convictions, but it doesn't, at least as I read it, say, and tell us which ones you're relying on.
Oh, I think it might, though.
Well, it does say, stating and writing the previous convictions to be relied upon.
To be relied upon.
But I don't understand your argument that it's not enough to list the disposition, that somehow you have to explain what the conviction was for. That's not what the statute requires.
Your Honor,
so if they, in answer to Judge Wood's question, it seems to me you'd have to say, yeah, that would be a perfectly good way of complying. Just highlight the convictions that you plan to rely upon.
That certainly is more accurate. You're getting closer, I guess, to the reasonable notice. And I'll admit, Your Honor, that there is not an exact form that the statute requires. It's just simply whether the government or the defendant received reasonable notice of the government's intent. And Areola Castillo, the Seventh Circuit, said the defendant must receive clear notice of the government's intent to use the prior conviction. At the sentencing hearing, the government's attorney acknowledged that was the first day that he realized
it. Yes, okay, but I don't understand you to have argued that there's anything wrong with that conviction, that it couldn't be used for enhancement.
If Mr. Williams wasn't aware that it was clear that the government intended to use that conviction, he wouldn't have had an opportunity to challenge it prior to the trial.
Well, but have you ever argued that there is some infirmity in that conviction, so that it would really make a difference if he had gotten this this notice in some way?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, I think the question is, do you need to argue that timely notice would have enabled you to challenge the prior conviction. Either maybe you didn't, weren't given your constitutional right to a lawyer or something, you know, some
that's
kind of...
That's the only ground.
Well, that's why I used it as an example. Or is 21 U.S.C. 851A1 one of those things that might as well be deleted from the books if you had this reliance requirement, since, you know, the government normally does have prior convictions and the notice requirement wouldn't amount to much?
I'm not sure I understand your question, Your Honor.
Well, I mean, I'm just saying, Judge Posner's asking you, is there, in fact, the need to show consequences from lack of notice? Because most of the time, people are not going to be able to show consequences. The government could just decide it's a nuisance to file these 851 motions. We're just not going to do it because, you know, if we know that the person really had these priors, then we can just introduce it at sentencing anyway.
Well, I don't know that it affected. It certainly could have affected the outcome of Mr. Williams' decision to go to trial. I'm not sure if that's exactly.
How so? Explain that.
Well, if you assume, and I think we have to acknowledge Mr. Williams was well aware of the 2002 conviction, that the government intended to enhance his sentence based on that, and that gives him a minimum 20 years, I think it's pretty clear based on Mr. Williams' criminal history and the amount of drugs in controversy here that his sentencing guidelines range would have been considerably more than one prior felony conviction, a 20-year minimum. Therefore, it wouldn't have altered his decision whether to take a plea or go to trial.
It would not have altered it?
I can't speak for that. I was not Mr. Williams' trial.
Where's the prejudice here from the failure of notice?
Had he been aware of two prior convictions and a mandatory life term, that may have altered his decision to possibly take a plea deal, Your Honor. Whereas one, he was already going to face, if he goes to trial, something.
So was he offered a plea deal for less than life in prison?
Your Honor, I am not sure, Your Honor.
If he wasn't offered one, there was no choice whether to take such a deal.
Well, you don't. I mean, it depends how far back we move the clock, because if he could rely on the 851 information that he was given and thought that there was really only one prior, then maybe he wouldn't have bothered even to try to initiate plea conversations with the U.S. attorney. If he knew that he was looking at mandatory life, his lawyer may have exercised himself more vigorously to go down the plea, and maybe he would have done an appeal waiver and we wouldn't be here. You know, there are all kinds of things that could happen.
Yes, Your Honor. And again, I don't know what was in Mr. Williams' mind prior to trial. I don't know if mandatory life would have been something that altered his decision, but
it's important for you to know that, though, at least at some level, because otherwise you have no answer to the question that Judge Posner has asked. You know, what actually are these 851 notices doing, and when they are, as you regard them, defective the way this one was, does it make any difference?
I believe it does, Your Honor. Again, I don't know that Mr. Williams expected a mandatory life term by deciding to go to trial. I just can't speak for Mr. Williams and what was going through his mind prior to trial. I would anticipate a reasonable person would definitely alter their decision whether to do that if a plea agreement was on the table.
Did you argue that in your brief? I don't remember that.
I believe
you argue that there was prejudice here?
I believe we pointed it out that Mr. Williams could have considered his...
Look, I have another problem with your case. So you say it's not enough to list all the... It's not enough just to give him a copy of his prior record. You have to highlight the case. But if you look at this record, although there are a lot of convictions here, there are only two that actually involved, well, no, one is, 1 year is misdemeanor. There's actually only one prior a felony that, I mean, he got a suspended sentence. I don't know what that is. Well, it says, one of them says felony intimidation, for which he got 2 years suspended sentence. So that would count as a felony. The only other one is this one that, in fact, the government sprang at sentencing, the 6 years. So it wouldn't take a lawyer a long time to look through this list and say, well, there are two possibilities here, so I'll look into them.
Your Honor,
maybe three possibilities. Two possibilities. Two possibilities. So why isn't that? I mean, that's sloppy and so on, but why wouldn't that be substantial compliance? And the real complaint would be you had a lawyer who didn't bother to look through this. Because they've warned that they're going to, in their 851 statement, they said, you know, this one conviction plus anything applicable in the pretrial services report. So you think the lawyer goes to the report, looks at the report, sees there are two prior felony convictions, and then, you know, investigates whether they could be a basis for enhancement. So in other words, the only harm is that he has to look at two convictions when, in fact, the government is only going to rely on one of those. Isn't that substantial compliance?
Your Honor, I see that my time's expired, if I can just briefly...
You can always answer pending questions.
Okay. I think it's just going down a slippery slope here when he has to go through all these documents and try to ask...
He doesn't have to go through all these documents. There's a list, his prior record, it takes like 10 seconds to read down and see there are two felony convictions.
The point that I raised today, though, Your Honor, is that it's not exactly clear that was a felony conviction on that the pretrial services report.
What, 6 years in prison for dealing in cocaine is not a felony?
Your Honor, we acknowledge that he received reasonable notice of that, of the 02 charge. I was pointing to the 93 convict, the 93.
Oh, the 93.
Yes.
Well, it says 18 months. Illinois Department of Corrections, possession of cocaine, 18 months, was suspended, but that's a felony term. Anything over a year, right?
I believe so, Your
Honor. Anything over a year is a felony, yes. Okay, so he looks at that, and the other one he looks at is this suspended, 2 years suspended for felony intimidation.
But, of course, this wasn't stapled to the 851 notice. The counsel had to go find the PSR somewhere.
Correct, Your Honor. And
had it been prepared yet at the time of the 851 notice?
I believe it had. I'm sure if the government was signing to it, it probably had. But,
but there's always one prepared. The government could have meant at such time as it's available.
And also, unlike the cases that both sides cited, this wasn't a document that was filed with the court as well. But I see that my time's expired. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you very much, counsel. Mr. Schmidt.
Good morning. This court's prior cases in Lowry, Bellinger, and Tringali have focused on...
Is this your standard procedure? Really sloppy.
Your Honor, we tried to identify specifically in the 851 notice all the ones we're absolutely sure that he has. Even at the time of indictment, we know we don't have perfect information about all of the defendant's prior felonies.
You had a copy of the pretrial service report. You stare at it. You see there are a couple extra felonies on it. Why in the world didn't you list the two or three in the notice? That's what Judge Posner is referring to as sloppy practice. Maybe excusable if you don't learn about these till later, but you knew about them on the date.
Actually, Your Honor, the 851 notice was prepared before the pretrial services report came out.
So you didn't even know that there were going to be other...
It was prepared before or served
problems.
Before?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. I didn't hear...
Prepared before or served before?
It was prepared before the pretrial services report came out. And it was, I can't tell you precisely if the pretrial services report was in our hands at the time it was filed, because this 851 notice was filed so quickly. This 851 notice was filed 6 days after the indictment.
It doesn't matter, because I don't know how you can incorporate by reference a document that doesn't exist. I completely understand how you can incorporate by reference an extant document, but we incorporate by reference a document somebody else will write in the future. I don't understand that in practice or principle.
We always know that there's going to be a pretrial services report. And
but you don't know which offenses are going to be on it. And I guess I'm troubled by that, and I'm troubled by the fact that in this particular, let's assume for the sake of argument that this one was sitting right in front of you when you prepared that 851 notice, but you didn't bother to put these other things on it. I've seen plenty of 851 notices where the government may list three or four qualifying offenses, and it turns out one of them, for whatever reason, washes out. The government just drops it. It doesn't hurt anybody if there's an extra one in there. It's routine, actually, that in the end the government really just proves up the ones that are necessary. So when the statute itself says, stating in writing the previous convictions to be relied upon, this is Congress saying, here's a notice requirement. We don't want you to second guess when the notice is helpful.
Right, Your Honor. And I believe what this Court's prior decisions have focused on was there reasonable notice, and did the defendant have an opportunity to be heard regarding the possibility of an enhanced sentence?
But were we correct to ignore the language of the statute and just say, well, it doesn't really have to be in writing and provide the previous convictions to be relied upon if somewhere out there in, you know, a giant file box, if you rooted long enough, you could find the previous convictions?
I think if the notice simply said, we're going to give you enhanced, we want to seek enhanced penalties, go find your felony conviction somewhere out there, I think that would be a different case. And I don't think that would be reasonable notice. But here,
unfortunately, if you don't know whether this thing was served before the list of 17 convictions was prepared, this document may have been exactly that. It may be the equivalent of saying, we plan to rely on your entire criminal record when we find out what it is. We hope you do, too. Yours sincerely, the government.
But I think the notice did do a few things effectively. First of all, it said quite clearly and unequivocally that the government was going to seek enhanced penalties under Section 841B of Title 21. The defendant couldn't be clearer about that. Secondly,
851 and the pretrial services report were filed on the same day, June 17, 2008, right? Or it says received U.S. Attorney June 17, 2008. That's the pretrial services report.
I see that
and
now, Your Honor. That is correct.
851 was filed that day.
We did receive the pretrial services report on the day that the 851 notice was filed, yes. That is correct.
But you think you drafted it without bothering to look at the pretrial services report?
I'm fairly confident that it was drafted in form before being filed, before the pretrial services report was submitted to us, because we had it prepared in advance. We didn't want to run into a timeliness issue, and here we filed it extremely early, much earlier than most 851 notices are filed.
Why would there be a timeliness issue? You only need to file it before the date of trial or the date of the guilty plea, and surely you know when those things are going to happen.
Yes, Your Honor. In this particular case, I honestly wanted to make sure that it wasn't forgotten about later, and so we filed it almost immediately upon the initiation of the case.
But it's really unprofessional. You should file it after you've read the pretrial report, and you've identified the convictions that you think you might rely on, and if there's somewhere you can't figure it out yet or something, then you say, you know, there are a couple of others, we're still investigating, and so on. That's the way to do it.
I will confess that the 851 notice is perhaps imperfect.
No, it's a terrible notice, and it's created a an appeal that should never have occurred, because it's just so. Is this how you routinely operate? Is there a practice? Is there some rule? Some practice in your office about how you deal with this situation? It occurs in every case.
I'm sorry, I don't know what Your Honor is referring to.
Do you have some practice, some office rule about what an 851 notice should include?
No, Your
Honor.
Like
an actual list of convictions?
I don't believe there's any written policy on it. I believe our practice is to try to...
Well, I think that should be a really big embarrassment for your office, because this is extremely sloppy. It generates an appeal issue for no reason, because there's nothing easier than to comply with the statute the way it's written.
I did want to emphasize that the defendant had more than a month before the final sentence was imposed here to address specifically the two prior drug felony convictions.
Well, what about the argument that,
and he didn't object
having,
either,
knowing what you were going to rely on for enhancement might have influenced his decision with regard to possible guilty plea negotiations?
I don't believe the defendant even argued that in his appellate brief.
That's true.
The issue was even raised in the appellate brief. And I believe the reason it wasn't raised is it would have been frivolous, because in this particular case, the defendant was facing essentially a life sentence, even very close to a life sentence, even without the mandatory life provision of 841B. That's because of the drug weights involved, the 924C conviction. The defendant ended up with a guideline sentence of level 40 and 420 months or 40 years to life as his guideline sentence.
Excuse me, though. On page 16 of the defendant's opening brief, it says, the government's 851 notice did not give Mr. Williams reasonable notice of his previous convictions, nor did allow him to make an informed decision between entering a plea or moving forward with trial. So that sounds to me like he has raised this point here.
But what I was commenting on, Your Honor,
is
that...
He said he waived it, and you said he didn't say a word about it in his brief, and that's just not right.
He just didn't argue that he would have made any different decision had he been aware specifically of the second prior drug felony. He was certainly aware of the prior cocaine dealing conviction explicitly. He was aware of the government's intent to proceed for the enhanced penalty. He was given a month before his sentencing in which to raise any objections to the prior drug felonies, and he raised not a single...
The notice doesn't give him very good... The actual notice doesn't give him a very good heads up about what the government's position is, because the difference between one and two convictions is the difference between a mandatory minimum of 20 years and a mandatory minimum of life. And the notice effectively says, we're going to seek a mandatory minimum of 20 years and maybe more. We'll tell you that later.
Well, specifically, the notice said that we were going to rely on the cocaine dealing conviction and all other convictions in order
exactly.
to seek.
Well, one cocaine dealing conviction is going to set his mandatory minimum at 20 years. The notice doesn't say whether it's the government's position that it will be seeking a mandatory minimum of life. It effectively says, we'll tell you later when we have analyzed the record in more detail.
But I don't believe Section 851 requires the government to say the term of years that the government is seeking, only that it is seeking enhanced penalties under the statute. And the real focus of this court has been, again, was there notice of the government's intent to seek an enhanced penalty, and did the defendant have an opportunity to be heard on that? And here...
It's so easy for you to comply with the statute. I don't understand it. You really want to come up here and make arguments and so on? All you had to do was pick out of the pretrial services report. Remember, you had it the same day you filed the 851. You could have waited one day to file the 851, look through this thing in 1 minute, see there were two prior felony convictions, and say, yeah, you're going to use them. you're going to rely on them for enhancement.
We should have done that. Unless you're
go back and tell the U.S. attorney that for the future it would be nice to have a uniform practice of compliance with the literal terms of the statute and spare us these appeal issues?
I will, Your Honor. Thank you. Unless there are additional questions, I'd ask the court to affirm the sentence and the conviction below. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. And Mr. Otis, our thanks to you for taking the appointment in this case and your helpfulness to the court as well as to your client. The case is taken under advisement.